We'll learn the Mishnah now on Daf Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, the Mishnah of Bar B'Machteres. The previous Mishnah had addressed the issue of Ben Sorer Umorer, and he is killed al Shem Sofo. In other words, we anticipate that he'll get into deep, deep trouble and cause the death of other people, and therefore he's put to death in anticipation of the future. So too, Habob Machteres, says the Mishnah, Nidon al Shem Sofo. When a person digs his way into someone's house, underneath his walls, in order to steal, he's a burglar, then we judge him based on what we anticipate to happen in the future. And then we're gonna allow him to be killed, this Baba Machteres. The Torah allows him to be killed, even though at this point he's not guilty of Ritzicha. There's no Chiv Misa Lachar at this point, but since he's well aware of the fact that the owner of the house will stand and defend himself rather than sit idly by and allow his belongings, his possessions to be stolen by the burglar, it's assumed up front that when someone burglarizes a house, he has already taken the precautions necessary to confront the Baal HaBayis and kill him if necessary. So that gives him the status of someone who's about to kill someone. So again, even though right at this moment he's not guilty of any capital crime, but his approach, his plan and his scheme indicates that he's ready to kill someone. And this is the basis for what it says in Shmos Chaf Beis, that if this Bav Machteres is found while he's digging in, then ain lo dam, that you can kill him, and his blood is not accountable. So this pasuk is talking about a case of a burglar who's tunneling into a house. He's considered a person without blood. In other words, he has the same status as someone who's dead. He could be killed during the break-in. And the Rambam says there's a heter to kill him, but there's no necessarily a chiv to kill him. And that would indicate, and we'll get into this question a little bit later on, that a Bav Machteres is not exactly identical with a rodef. Of course, in the case of a rodef, there's a mitzvah to kill the rodef in order to save the nirdaf. Here, he's not yet a rodef. He's potentially a rodef down the line. We anticipate that he might kill the owner of the house, and therefore, ain lo damim. Now the Mishnah discusses a case where this Bava Machteres is responsible for damaging the property of the Baal HaBayis during the course of his burglary. And just by way of introduction, we've discussed in the past the principle of Kim Levi D'Rab Mine, which means that if you violate two averos simultaneously, you're only going to be punished for the more severe violation, given the severe penalty, in this case the death penalty, as opposed to a lighter penalty like paying mamon or being chayv malchus. And therefore the Mishnah says here, as we apply this principle of Kimle to our Mishnah, Hoya Baba Machteres Vishavar Es HaChavis, while he's digging his way in, he breaks a barrel, and therefore he, under normal situations, circumstances, would be chayiv compensation. And the question is now, is this a kimle v'derab mini situation in which we exempt the mazik, the damager, from paying compensation? So again, under normal situations, a burglar is considered ein lo damim. However, the Mishnah goes on to say, im yesh lo damim, in other words, his blood is accountable, meaning we cannot kill him, then chayav. Now we're going to learn a little bit later on, Emir Tzashem, under what circumstances would it be that yesh lo damim and the halacha of ein lo damim is suspended with regard to a burglar. Let's say, for example, a father digs his way into his son's house. He's so desperate for funds, but we don't believe that he's already calculated and he has prepared. He's prepared to kill his own son. That far he's not going to go. He has mercy, he has compassion and love for his son. So that's a case of Yeshlo Damim. And of course, the son is not allowed to put his father to death. And in such a case, there's no kimlevi derabine, because at the moment that the father is digging his way into his son's house, he cannot be killed, and he doesn't have the status of, you know, someone who's being, you know, who's violating an avera of a capital nature, for which he would be put to death. So that's called Yeshlo Dom. It's chayev. Therefore, he has to pay compensation for mazik, for damages that he broke his son's barrel. He can be sued in a court of law, and he'll have to pay. There's no kimle mirabine in this particular bab machteres, because there is no more severe punishment. We cannot put him to death. The son is not allowed to kill him. And in such a case, let's say, for example, the father, you know, escapes from his son's house, and at this point he has caused damage while he was pursuing his burglary. Would we say therefore that he's parted from paying damages? At this particular point, what happens after the Baba Machteres leaves the house and he survives it unharmed, that's very relevant to the next scenario in the Mishnah, in Ein Lo Damim, which means that you're allowed to kill him. We're not talking about a father on a son, we're talking about the classical case of a Baba Machteres, so he can be killed while he's involved in the burglary. Potter. Then if he broke the Balabais's barrel, or he ruined his carpet or his couch or his artwork or whatever he did, Potter doesn't have to pay damages. We're going to apply the principle of Kimle Midaramine. But again, that only will apply to damages that he generated while he was Chayv Misa, while he was digging and stealing and burglarizing the owner's house. But let's say now he left the house and he's no longer above Machteres. If he breaks something at that point, then he certainly would have to pay for that. In other words, if he caused this damage simultaneous with his status as Ein Lo Damim, meaning while he's involved in the burglary in which he's to be killed or can be killed, then we exempt him from the Maisa that was Machayev Him Mamon, meaning the Maisa Hezek that took place simultaneously with the Maisa Machayev Misa because of Kimle Ramine. But if the Baba Machteres goes out of the house and he was never actually punished with a death penalty, and again, he never murdered anybody either one. So in that case, if he would cause some sort of damage subsequent to that point, obviously he's going to have to pay for that. So this whole discussion in the Mishnah about Kimle Ramine to exempt the Baba Machteres from paying damages is only damages that he incurred simultaneous with his Baba Machteres, his burglary. Now the Gemara analyzes that Mishnah. Omar Rava, my time of the Machteres, why did the Torah say that a Baba Machteres deserves to die? After all, a Ganav, it's not a good thing, but he's not Chayv Misa. So a person breaks into someone's house for the purpose of stealing, therefore he's Chayv Misa. Why? And for Rava says, Chazokeinu the Mamid Atzma Mamona, a person's not going to sit idly, passively watching as somebody steals his property. And therefore, he certainly is going to try to do the best that he can to accost to confront the Ganav and try to see if he can prevent the Ganav from stealing. Vahai Meimar Omar. Now let's think of the burglar himself when he began to prepare for this burglary. What did he realize? He realized that he's not going to be able to get away with this without the Baal Bais confronting him. So he says, Iazilna, if I go ahead into the house, Koilapoi, Veloshovikli, the Baal Bais is not going to allow me to rob him. He's going to confront me. Ve'i Koilapoi, and now that I know that, again, I'm prepared for that possibility, that he, the Baal Bais, will confront me, is Katilnale. I'm going to prepare myself and be ready to kill him. And he's an armed robber. Patora Omer, Baal Hargucha, Hashkem, Lahargo, somebody is threatening to kill you, you kill him first. And here there seems to be a chiddush here in the Ran, which is called the Chidushe Aran al Shas. He wants to know, is it really true that every single burglar would murder his victim in order to rob him? Aren't there certain burglars who are there just to, you know, to steal? They need food, but they're not murderers. And if the victim would confront them, and realizing that the only way out is to murder someone, to murder the Baal Bais, they would drop the goods and run out of the house, and hopefully they won't get caught. So how can we always up front be sure that every burglar would murder his victim? You'll see how he reinterprets this sugya in the light of his understanding. But Rashi assumes that, you know, this was all premeditated. The ganav is armed and he's waiting, if need be, to kill the Baal Bais. That's what a burglar is all about. Now it's interesting that in the language HaTorah Omra Imbach Lahargucha Hashkem Lahargo, it sounds like we're talking about a situation that is not exactly a rodev. A rodev is a separate category. Bo Lahargucha Hashkem Lahargo is not as far reaching as a rodev. You know, the rodev is on his way, is pursuing his victim, his potential victim. I don't know if that's in Bola Hargucha. Rashi, if you take a look, Chazokeinu the Mamed Atzmo Al Mamono, he says, Meimer Omer Agadav Yazil Negabe Koi Bapev Hikoi Katil Nalev Amalucha Torah Ein Lo Domim. What does that mean, Ein Lo Domim? Obviously, you know, he's not, we don't recognize his claim to Domim. Let's see if we can give it a accountability, right? There's no accountability for his Domim. That's what Rashi says, Ein Lo Domim. But then Rashi says, Malamdecha, Me'achashu Bo Lahargucha Hashkem Ata Lahargo. It's very strange. Rashi seems to be saying there are two chidushim here. Chidush number one is Ein Lo Domim, and chidush number two is that he's a Baal Hargucha Hashkem Lahargo. I mean, that second chidush is a Paul Yotze, the first chidush of Ein Lo Domim. I mean, the whole Rashi should have reversed the order. He said, the Amr Lecha Torah, Torah revealed to you that this guy is Baal Hargucha, and therefore Hashkem Lahargo, and that's Ein Lo Domim. Rashi starts with Ein Lo Domim, I don't know. This Rashi is a little bit unclear to me. But in general, I mean, what has to be studied and analyzed here is whether or not a Bob Machteris is a rodev. And all the implications of a rodev. I don't know. Let's see if we can, if we can clarify this as we go along. Omar Rav. So this is a very profound sugya here that we're about to begin. Until now we've been discussing a case where the burglar, toch kidei his gneva, he destroys kelim. What about if he steals kelim? And that's exactly what he was motivated by, and in fact he took these kelim, and he's on his merry way. Potter, does he have to return these kelim? Says Rav, no. He doesn't have to return these kelim. which really means if we ever catch up with this guy, and we obviously sue him for theft, he doesn't have to pay for the theft. I mean, it's like a chote niskar. He could have been killed, but now we can't kill him, but at least let him return the goods. No. Bidomim kninhu, or kinanhu. He has purchased and acquired ownership over these utensils with his damim, meaning that since he could have been killed at the time that he took these goods, he acquired ownership on these goods, and if he doesn't have to pay, he doesn't have to pay anything. He doesn't have to, well, forget about payment. He doesn't even have to return. He doesn't have to return the objects that he stole. There are no monetary chiyuvim whatsoever. Now, obviously, Rav is going a major step further beyond our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is talking about the fact that if he broke kelim, then he doesn't have to pay compensation under the law of mazik. Rav is telling us that even if the object that was stolen is be'en, it's still intact. And obviously the owner wants to get it back. No, he doesn't return it. Why? Because bidaminu bidamim knanhu. He acquired it with his blood. In other words, since he was liable to lose his life, therefore he has no monetary obligations even to return the stolen goods. Now, compensation is a chiv mamon. But hashavas habe'en, that's, forget about chiv mamon. I mean, if we know who owns the mamon, that rightful owner has rights to take back the mamon. I don't have to see it as a chiv damim. So it's very interesting to begin to understand what's going on. Why would Rav say that he doesn't have to return the object that he stole? That has nothing to do with chiyuve mamon in the classical sense of compensation. I owe you for damage. That has to do with the fact that it's yours. You're just taking that which is rightfully yours. And the answer has to lie in the word koninu, that he was konit. He mamish acquires ownership. Now, Rava is not happy with Rav. And they didn't live exactly at the same time, but Omar Rava mistabra milsad rabbi sheshiber. I can understand this concept of a kinyan if the Bob Machteres broke a kli, the lesnahu, it no longer exists, and now there's just a chiyuv compensation. So you could say that chiyuv compensation never was generated, never got off the ground, because at that time he was ein lo damim. Aval notal lo. But I can't begin to understand Rav in the case where the object of the kli is be'en. This is not a logical conclusion to say that the burglar doesn't have to give back the stolen kli, because at the time that he stole it, he was chayv misa. Well, now he's holding on to someone else's kli. And Rava basically would accept the principle of kimle but the ramimine when you're talking about a chiyuv mamon, a chiyuv tashlume nezek, which is a compensation. He's not chai for that compensation. But Rava would say that in the case where the be'en is still existing, here the returning has nothing to do with compensation. It belongs to the Baal HaBayis. Give it back to the Baal HaBayis. And therefore it's poshut, says Rava, that he has to return it to the Baal HaBayis. So perhaps the machlokas here between Rav and Rava is about this concept of kinyan. Rav maintains that a ganav makes a kinyan on the object that he stole. And even if he has to return the stolen good itself, if it's banned, that's just a compensation, a special chiyuv of hashava. But he's not returning to the owner that which the owner owns, because the owner no longer owns it. The ganav made the kinyan on it. And the reason why the ganav made the kinyan on it is because he was ein lo damim when he took the object. Again, it's very difficult to understand why the halacha of ptur Tashlumin would help us in Rav's case to say that the burglar doesn't have to return the object itself. Forget about Chiyuv Tashlumin, return the object. Returning the object is the right, the basic right of the owner of the object. Give me back my object. But no, Rav says it's no longer your object. The burglar made a kinyan on it. I mean, obviously Rav is not happy with that, because that very premise that the ganav now becomes the proud owner of the object that he steals, that's not acceptable. It could be that the object in essence is being held by the ganav on a temporary basis. It's almost like a pikadon biyado, but certainly the ganav has no kinyan on the object. That's really a pella. I had to understand Rav's view that not only is the ganav potter from tashlum, he doesn't have to pay compensation to the owner of the object. He doesn't have to fork it over to the owner of the object, because he, the ganav, owns it. He acquired it. Now Rashi says that this halacha and this even Rav accepts that the ganav is potter for paying tashlumei nezikin if the kli was broken. Says Rashi that applies whether he broke it during the burglary or after the burglary. And it seems like many Rishonim accept Rashi. And this really justifies why Rav, in attacking Rav, first introduced the fact that he accepts Rav's opinion in a case where the kelim are broken. I mean, that's what it says in the Mishnah. Why did Rav have to reiterate what we know from the Mishnah? And the answer is because he's telling you a chiddush, that even if he finished his gneva and he left the scene of the crime, and now the object is broken, he doesn't have to pay for it. And again, you know, it's very interesting to think, why would it be, according to Tosfos in Rava, that kelim that were broken after he finishes his gneva, that he should be potter from nezikin? You know, the bishlam, if they broke during his gneva, you could say ain lo domim, and therefore he doesn't have any. But once he leaves the house, there's no ain lo domim. You know, nobody's allowed to kill him. So why should he be potter if he broke the keli after he left the house? You know, that's a very difficult question to answer. So even in Rava's frame of reference, we're not out in the clear. But certainly we don't understand Rav. And when Rava says now I will not allow, but if the vessel is still banned, then certainly the Baal Bais is going to get back his vessel against Rav. Velohim Omar Rava filu notal, and I can take a shvua that Rav said what he said even in the case of notal, even in the case where the kli is still very much alive and well. He according to Rav, the ganav has acquired ownership over it. Now, it's interesting, at this point in the sugya, Rava is going to make an attempt to try to explain the logic of Rav, even though Rava disagrees with Rav. And he says the following, Da yeshlo damim v'nensu, Rav was analyzing the following question. We know that if the ganav destroyed the kelim, Shiber Asachovis, while he was stealing, he doesn't have to pay. That's explicit in the Mishnah. There's no chiv compensation, tashlumi domim, for a maisa hezek that was part and parcel of his avera of breaking into his friend's house, which is a chiv misa, and therefore kimle d'raminei will apply. That makes sense if another aveiru was done here. And not only did he break in, he also broke the kelim. But what happens if the kli breaks on its own? We call this onus. It's unavoidable. Now, again, exactly what the heichatimtza here is, I'm not clear. But Rav wanted to address that scenario. And his answer was that chayev, that in such a case, even though yeshlo damim, he still has to pay compensation. I'm sorry, that because it's yeshlo damim, and he has to pay compensation, he'll pay compensation even for onus. And Rav wanted to understand why. And the answer is, Alma Bershusei Kaime, that this Ganov is considered to have possessed, he acquired ownership over the object that he stole. And therefore, if it becomes the property of the Ganov, then he'll have to pay for it, even if it is destroyed by onus. Because, you know, in Chiyuvei Shmira and Achrayus, there's no reason to pin a person down to pay for the loss of an object if it was an onus situation. That's beyond his control. But the answer is that it's Bershusei Kaime. The fact that a ganav, a gazan, is chayav for onsim is predicated on the premise that he acquires ownership. Ownership. When I lose something that's mine, it doesn't matter why I lost it. If my animal was struck by a bolt of lightning and died, I suffer that loss because I'm the owner of the animal. There's no one else who can pay me for it. Now, if the ganav is chayav for onsim, if this barrel breaks, be onus, it must be because Bershusei Kaimi, that somehow, magically, the Ganov acquires ownership over the object. It becomes his property, and therefore he's going to have to pay for onsim. Which means that if the Ganov would return the stolen object in a case where it wasn't destroyed, then what would that mean? That would be a compensation. That would be a chiyuv mamon. Right now, he's the owner of this item, according to Rav. Ella, what he caused a loss to the Nignav, to the Baal Bais, if you're going to force him to pay for that, then he's paying for his own object. In other words, he doesn't have any chiyuv hashava on the object, because since, you know, ein lo damim, you're permissible to kill him, therefore he makes a kinyan, and not only does he make a kinyan, which means he doesn't have to return the goods themselves, but he don't have to pay any sort of compensation, because there's no chiyuv tashlumei mamon if it emerged and was generated simultaneous with the chiyuv misa of ein lo damim. So again, Rav is explaining Rav, even though he doesn't agree with him, that if the ganav is chayev for onsim, it must be that he's not just a regular classical shomer, but rather he has the din of a bailim. He has acquired ownership over the stolen goods. And that's why the Torah holds him responsible for accidents. And he has to pay for that. That's in the case of einlo, of yeshlo damim. In the case of ein lo damim, according to Rav, once again, once he's a ganav, he acquires ownership over the stolen goods. Elo what? He's got to pay compensation, either by returning those goods or paying their value. But the answer is that since he was ein lo damim, he's subject to being killed, if he's free from paying any compensation. So, mimanafshach, says Rav. You can't sue this ganav. Bitoras be'en, well, he's the bailim, and therefore you can't force him to cough up the object. Ela what? Let him pay the object bitoras tashlumin, or for that matter, money out of pocket bitoras tashlumin. The answer is that there's no chiyuv tashlumin that's generated simultaneous with the chiyuv misa. So Rav basically is telling us that bidamayu, Bidomim Kaninu, with his blood, he made a kinyan. And what that means is that kinyan of the gzela on the part of the gazan is not, of the cheftzai gazel, is not a result of ein lo damim. Even if yesh lo damim, he has that kinyan. What the ein lo damim is adding here is that there's no chiyuv tashlumei mamon. And he doesn't have to return the original object because of the kinyan. Elo what, he has a chiyuv to return that object b'toras tashlumin. That would be true in the case of yeshlo damim, but not in the case of ein lo damim. Velohi. And now, even after Rava did such a valiant effort in explaining and justifying the rationale of Rav, the svar, the reasoning of Rav, but nevertheless he disagrees with it. Ki o kim nerachmanu b'shusei. When the Torah, to what extent does the Torah say that the gazlan is considered the owner of the object? That's only le'inyan owns him. He doesn't really own the guf ha-chefetz. He owns it as far as chiyuve owns him is concerned. It's like, what shall I say, a shoel. A shoel has rights to use the object, therefore he becomes like a bailim and he's chai for owns him. Avalinyan mikna. But with regard to the be'en itself, to tell me that he has a full-fledged ownership on the be'en, no, b'shusei demari kaima, that's owned by its original owner, by its rightful owner. He doesn't acquire this bava machteres ownership in a full sense on that which he steals. He holds on to the stolen objects as a shomer would hold on to a pikadon, but in this case, he has the highest level of a shomer, like that of a... we'll call it a shoel, and he's chayev for onsim because he's almost a bailim. He pays for onsim as if he were the bailim. That's what Rachmana Bershusei, you know, Ukimne Bershusei. So it's only like, you know, for negative drawbacks, he's considered the bailim, meaning he has to pay for onsim, like the case of a shoel. But you're not going to tell me that he owns the be'en, and therefore the original owner is knocked off from his own be'en. So again, Rav understands very well why a ganav is chayev for the chefta hanigzal, that which he stole. The reason why, in the case of a ganav, he's liable, and as he has to pay for onsim, says Rava, is that he's like a shoel, and a shoel is chai for onsim. That's because kol ana shalo. In the case of a ganov, you know, since he intends to keep the object, that's why he stole it, he's also held completely responsible for the object, like kol ana shalo, like a shoel. And Rav apparently would go even further than that. He's saying that a gazlan is different than a shoel. A shoel has responsibility, kabbalah sachrayas, he has to pay in the case of onsim, but in the case of a ganav, a gazlan, there was no kabbalah sachrayas, but there is halach that the Torah says he's chai for onsim because he is the bailim over the object. And Rav took this to, you know, literally and to its extreme, and therefore he doesn't have to return the be'en. Elo what, he has to pay compensation, but here it's ein lo damim. Tnan, the Gemara wants to support Rava from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says, Bav machteres v'shiber hachavis. If he broke the object, then yesh lo damim chayv, but ein lo damim potter, if he's a full-fledged Bava Machteres, not the exceptional case of a father, but the regular case, then he's parted from compensation for a broken vessel. Taima de Shiber, de chi ein lo damim patur. So when do we say that ein lo damim, that if his blood is not accountable, then we say he's exempt from monetary liability? That's because the as the Mishnah says, the barrel was broken, hanotal. But if he's holding on to the barrel and it's still intact, it's bien, then obviously the bailim have a right to get it back. So the Mishnah itself, if it wanted to hold like Rav, it should tell us a bigger chiddush that even in the case of notal, where the object is still bien, still the ganav is pot because of this kimlev the ramine of ein lo domim. So the Gemara answers no. Who adin dafilu notal nami? In defense of Rav, we could say that the Mishnah would go as far as to say that even if the ganav is holding on to the object and the barrel is still in existence, he's still potter from giving it back. Why does the Mishnah mention that he broke the chavis? Kamash malon the chiyeshlo damim afal gav de shiber nami chayav. That in a case of yeshlo damim, which we said was the case of the father who breaks into his son, and the burglar's blood is accountable, then even though he broke the barrel, he still chayav to pay for it. What does that mean? Even though he broke the barrel, he still chayav to pay. So the Gemara asks immediately, Pshita Mazeku, what do you mean? I need the Mishnah to tell me that if the Ganav breaks Kalim, he has to pay? I mean, why would I think he doesn't have to pay? He's a Mazik. Hokamash Malanda, Filu Shalobikavana. Even if he didn't break anything intentionally, it was all b'shogeg. Nevertheless, he still has to pay for it. And again, even though that would seem to be obvious, because we have a principle called Adam Muad Li Olam, but I might think that Adam Muad Li Olam is referring to some sort of negative kavana. You know, he had some sort of intention to damage. And the Chiddush of our Mishnah is that he's chayev even for unintentional damage. So the Gemara says, but that comes under a basic principle that we've been taught in Mishnayos, and that is under Muad Li Olam, that a person is chayev for damages if he damaged somebody. Li Olam means even if he did it unintentionally, he was sleeping, or well, I don't know about sleeping, but he slipped on a banana peel, and so forth and so on. So why did the Mishnah have to tell me that which I already know? Kasha, that becomes a difficult statement on the Pshat of Rav. Therefore, our Mishnah would seem to indicate that Rav's reading of the Mishnah is correct and not Rav's. Now, it doesn't say tuvta, it only says kasha, and a lot of the Rishonim say that kasha means there is a possible answer, and maybe you could have said the following, that the Mishnah could have mentioned the case of breaking, of shiver, because of the first case, the case of... The Mishnah is basically reiterating what we know, that Adam Amud Liolam even Bishogi, but sometimes the Mishnah wants to repeat that which we already know. So it's not an absolute refutation of Rav. Mosiv Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. Now Rav Bibi Bar Abaye asks Akasha on Rava from the Brisa of Hagonev Kis B'Shabbos. So the case is, again, a Kimlev the Rabbinate case, because he's stealing someone's money bag by carrying it from Rishus HaYochid out to Rishus HaRab. But he makes a Kinyan with a Chiv Gneva before he actually removes it from the Rishus of the Nignav, and therefore there is no Kimlev Rabbinic, because Kimlev Rabbinic requires absolute simultaneity between the Chiv Mis and the Chiv Mamon. So therefore, the Braisa says Chayav. Sharei Nischayav Begneva Kodim Shebali Dei Iser Shabbos. The very moment that he lifted up the Gneva, he was Konev, he lifted it more than 3 tefachim with Hagbah, and he's already Chayav to pay for that Gneva. Later on, even if it's a few seconds later, he removes the pocketbook from the Rishus HaYoch, takes it out of Rishus HaRabim. There was no absolute simultaneity be'idna of the Averas Chil Shabbos of Hotzah with the Chiv moment of Gneva. But Hayamagar V'yotze, if he was dragging it out, notice he never lifted the money bag, he just was dragging it out into the street, potter, therefore he doesn't have to pay any monetary compensation for the money bag, or for the bag, we'll call it. Sharei Isur Gneva V'Isur Skilu Bom Kechad, that he never made a kinyan on it until he took it out of the Rishus HaYochid. It's the Hotzam Rishus HaNignav that clinches the Kinyan HaGanav. And at that very second that he took it out of the Rishus HaNignav, he brought it out in Rishus HaRab, and he violated Shabbos. And therefore, Kim Levi Rabbi applies and he doesn't have to pay for the object. Now, why is this a refutation of Rava? What's the kasha here on Rav? This last piece in the Braisa that says Sharisa Gnevi Isa Skila Boyin Kiechod in the case of Gorer Viyotze, Pashtus is that the theft, the purse is still extant, it's still in existence, and nevertheless the Mishnah nevertheless the Braisa says that he doesn't have to pay. So Gemara says, "Hilchasa dishdanu binara." That the Bryce is talking about a case where he took the purse and he threw it into the river, but enochinami, if it was still intact, then he would be required to return it aliba de Rava. Now the Gemara tells us a story that Rava himself was once the victim of a gneva, and he paskin like Rava ignavle dichre b'machtarta. Somebody tunneled into his property and stole his sheep. Is hadrinu niale velo kablinu. The burglar eventually did tshuva, and now he wants to return it, and b'makayim is chiyuv, and Rava refused to accept it. Omar, he declares, ho'il v'nofak b'pumei d'Rav, since Rav issued such a ruling, and according to Rav's ruling, any bav machteres is potter from even returning the original object, in this case, the Imri, the Dichri, I should say, the Dichri, I think, is an Ayal, is a ram, is therefore Rava, out of respect, out of deference to Rav, would refuse to receive the stolen object back, because it was stolen in a Bav Machteres situation, and therefore, sort of Rav, out of deference to Rav, would refuse to accept this back. Now, it's very interesting because it's very nice for Rav to do such a thing. But on the other hand, if the Bava Machteres really wants to do Tshuva Gemura, in a sense, you're denying him the Ganav's rights to his ability, his potential to do full Tshuva and return the object. Maybe the halacha mechila kicks in here, or something along that line. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a brisa, ein lo damim im zarach hashemesh olav. You can kill him only if the sun is clear, you know, it shines upon him. What does that mean? Kvi hashemesh olav bilvad zarach, what means it shines upon the burglar? Rather, ela im baruch hadavar kashemesh ein lo shalom imach. If, let's say, it's a regular person who's a burglar, and he breaks in, then it's bar lecha kishemesh ein lo shalom imach. You know, it's if you try to defend yourself in a confrontation, he'll kill you. Is hargeyu, you kill him first. V'im lav al targenu. But if it's not crystal clear to you, so again, the burden of proof here is on the balabais to establish that there is an intention on the part of the Bava Machteres to kill him. In the absence of that proof positive, he has no way of knowing that for sure. He's not allowed to kill the Gano, the Bava Machteres. But Tanya Yiduk, yet we have another brayis on the same pasuk, im zarcha shemesh olav domim lo, that if the sun is shining on him, then he has blood. V'chi hashemesh olav bilvad zarcha, again the same question, what does that mean, the sun shone on him? Ela im bar lecha kashemesh yesh lo shalom imach al targeu. If it's the exception to the rule, namely that there's some clear-cut evidence that he's not going to kill you, this burglar, but in lav hargeu, if you don't have that clear, in the absence of that clear-cut evidence that he's coming peacefully, so to speak, then kill him. It's kasha stoma stoma. There's a contradiction here between the first price and the other hand, and the other price. So what do you do as a general rule, and what's the exception to the rule? The first price indicates that the general rule is that he's b'shalom imach, so to speak. He won't kill you, this burglar, but you have to you know, you have to elicit proof positive that he will kill you. And the second braisa, no, you assume that he's going to kill you. Only the exceptional rules of him bar lecha sheyesh lo shalom. Lo kasha. Gemara says this is not a stira. And here we turn to dafayim beis amid beis. Kan be of ala ben. Kan de ben al ha'av. If a father is intruding, he's digging a tunnel and burglarizing his son knows that it's Shalom Imo, that he, even if he confronts his father to protect the father's going to run away. He's not going to chas shalom kill his own son. But Kamei ben alav, the son doesn't have that level of compassion vis-a-vis his father, and therefore, if his father burglarizes him, if he burglarizes his father, then there's a distinct possibility that, or probability that he'll confront his father if necessary and kill his father. It's mind-boggling. So therefore, the two braises are not contradicting each other. They're dealing with two scenarios. And as the first braise says, you need it to be clear to you that he's not at peace with you. That's the case of the father. But in the second braise that says, no, you have to be clear that he's coming to kill you. I'm sorry, you have to be clear that he's coming b'shalom and he won't kill you, that's the case of the son, or for that matter, any classical case of Bava Machteres. Okay, the Gemara is going to go on and develop this a little bit further, but I think the hour is late. I wish everyone a Chag Sameach, and the Mitzvah will try to proceed and continue with this sugya tomorrow.